back to the Rodcast. It is a Freak Flag feel good, fake it till you make it. Ric Flair, woo! Football 512 Friday edition of the Rodcast. And 512 Friday means my man Patrick, my co-host, the Idillionaire. He plays jams from local bands and artists, very talented human beings that you have a chance to catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is Tinted Vision, and they are playing Saturday at the ABGB.
ABGB, like that. All right, thank you, Patrick, for that. Also, Patrick comes up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, which you can check it out at the Horn ATX on the X account. Let the folks know what the topic is, Patrick, for the Big Fat Poll of the Day.
Big Fat Poll of the Day. Who will lead Texas in receiving yards against Colorado State?
Okay. Yeah, like I said, it could be five different guys, and I wouldn't be surprised at any of them. Nope. That's how deep Texas is right now at wide receiver. And like I said, you know, we don't know how long the first team is even going to be in there. We assume at least for the first half, and then maybe the first drive of the second half, and after that, we want some March Madness. And then you got to consider who Arch, if they're going to still be throwing the football when Arch is in there, and how much they're going to be throwing the football into. So a lot of factors that could play a role. But I'm going to go with Cook, and I'm going to go with Cook or Bond. I haven't figured out which one I'm going to vote for, but Cook or Bond are probably the most likely for me. We shall see, though. Good problem to have for Texas. Texas fans, too. Even we are right now, I think, uncertain about who's going to be the top receivers, who's going to be starting receivers for this group.
But that's kind of one of the fun parts about watching this game on Saturday, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely one of the things I'm looking for, first and foremost. Who starts, and then who's getting the most targets?
The fun part is watching the wide receivers and saying, man, who's getting the target shares and how do they look and what's the chemistry like and who's got the speed and who's got the pickup and can we see a big Silas Bolden catch? And then the flip of that is the other side, which is please defensive. Please secondary.
Yeah.
Please secondary. Look really good, secondary. Please.
Yeah.
Like that one, I don't know if it's as fun. That one's more of step up.
The secondary to me is more concerning. That's more of a grave concern than the wide receivers. That's just fun.
Exactly.
We know there's going to be, there's going to be really good production at wide receiver, and we know Sark's going to figure out his rotation and the circle of trust. We just don't know how big it is. So that's fun to follow. I'm a little stressed about the secondary.
Exactly. Yeah.
That could end up being real problematic. Like if they can't defend Colorado State's air raid, that would give me some pause about, them going forward in the SEC. I'm with you. It's exciting. And I want to see the pass rush. I've talked about, we'll get into that in Rod's rant, but I think the pass rush actually could play a huge role even against this air raid offense. And I'll explain that, but we'll get into more Texas, Colorado State, of course. That's your topic for the Big Fat Poll today. Go check it out. We also get into some NFL news, notes, and nuggets. We'll get back to this Dak Prescott conversation because Dak and Jerry Jones seem to be trading jabs via the media recently, and we'll play some Dak audio for you about how he feels about not only what Jerry Jones says, but how he feels about coming to basically to week one and not having an extension done with the Dallas Cowboys and the potential of playing out the last year on his contract and reaching free agency. So we'll hear how Dak feels about that. And speaking of quarterbacks, QB1s, Tom Brady recently found himself in, I guess, hot water with a conflict of interest as his new broadcasting gig that he's going to have and his status as a part minority owner in the NFL, and apparently NFL owners, they are putting down some pretty harsh restrictions on Tom Brady, the minority owner Tom Brady, if he is going to indeed become a broadcaster. And I think he already signed the deal to obviously come on as a color analyst in the booth. And right now the NFL owners are saying, well, if you're going to be a color analyst in the booth, you don't have the same access as other broadcasters.
Yes.
You're not going to get that because you are also a minority owner and a partial owner of the Raiders.
Your best interest are to help your team.
Yeah, like basically you're a walking conflict of interest, and
yes,
they're basically saying because of that they're going to put restrictions on his access.
Yeah.
as a broadcaster.
And
so we'll
maybe
get into that, 'cause it's an
interesting
story.
Because of what the Patriots have done in the past, we don't trust you. Maybe a little bit.
There's some background. There's some baggage. There's a little bit of history. There's some history there. And he was trying to do something shady with the Dolphins too. Trying to pull a Jackie Moon and be a owner / player. Oh, Tom Brady's always he's devious. Tom Brady is devious, and in the best kind of way, by the way. Trying to win you some championships, kind of devious. You know what I mean? That kind of guy. All right, so we'll get to that story too because I think it's really interesting. But first, let's hit the horn headline. So let's get updated. Let's get educated. Let's get informed with all the top stories of the day with my man Patrick Davis and the horn headlines.
All right, your horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros took advantage of two errors in the eighth inning to rally for a 6-3 win over the Royals. Jason Hayward knocked in two runs in his Astros debut, while Hunter Brown had another quality start, pitching 6 2/3 innings, only allowing two hits. Framber Valdez takes the mound for the Astros tonight, pitching against a 14-win Seth Lugo for the Royals. The Rangers swept the White Sox with a 2-1 win yesterday. Corey Seager got his 200th career home run on a solo shot in the fourth, and Nathan Eovaldi was able to pick up his 10th win of the season, going 7 innings with 10 strikeouts, only allowing one hit. The Rangers head home now to start a series with the A's tonight, with John Gray getting the start. In the NFL, Brandon Ayuk got the 49ers ended their stalemate with a 4-year, $120 million contract extension that will keep him in San Francisco through the 2028 season. Now the 49ers still have to deal with the holdout of Trent Williams, while the Bengals are still working to sign Ja'Marr Chase before the season. And in college football Thursday night, several teams nearly avoided upsets. Number 24 NC State ended the fourth quarter down to Western Carolina before putting up 21 unanswered for a 38-21 win. Colorado held on, stopping North Dakota State a few yards short of the end zone in the final seconds to win 31-26. And a missed field goal as time expired gave North Carolina a 19-17 win over Minnesota in a game where North Carolina's starting quarterback Max Johnson had to be carted off the field with a knee injury. College football action resumes tonight, and then a full slate of games on Saturday. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines there. And we'll get back to some college football action. And at 9 o'clock, we'll look ahead and preview some of the big games of the weekend, including the Aggies versus the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That's one of the bigger games this weekend, if not the biggest, actually, among the games. We'll talk about that. We'll also get to Texas-Colorado State prep. I'll give you the thorough breakdown. We'll do that next segment when we get into Raj Rant. So don't worry about that. Nobody's going to break it down any more thorough than Patrick and I. So we'll do that coming up next segment. And we still have some Sark sound we're going to get to from his Zoom availability with the media yesterday, which he'll do every Thursday. And so we'll play some more Sark sound coming up next hour. But let's get to this. We'll get to the Dak story here in a second. Let's get to this Tom Brady story, because this is actually pretty interesting, and it shows you that the NFL owners, who they just decided this, by the way, at NFL meetings on Tuesday. So this was just decided on earlier this week. We know Tom Brady signed a 10-year deal to be a broadcaster with Fox, 10-year with $375 million deal, I believe it was, to join Fox as an analyst. And that starts the 2024 season, so starting up this season. But also Tom Brady, because he wants to diversify his portfolio, he's also a partial minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. And at the NFL meeting on Tuesday, the owners decided that there got to be certain restrictions on Tom Brady if he's going to be both. If he's going to be a broadcaster and also be an NFL owner, well, because of his conflict of interest being an NFL owner with the Raiders, he's not going to be allowed the same access that other broadcasters would be, because they get insider access to all these other teams. They get to go into the facilities. They get to go into the locker room, meet with the coaches, meet with the players. They get to, you know, they get all. That's why I always say it's a great idea to get out of the coaching game for a while and just get into the go into media and broadcasting, because you get all of the access. You get to find out. You get all the research to find out what every team is doing, and you can always just go back to coaching. Once you find out what every team is doing, yeah. and they give you all their secrets, and you learn a lot of their schemes, and you learn how, you know, their business model operates, you go talk to the GM and everything, and they'll be very open with you, because the NFL is a television product. They want their television product to be really good. So the NFL is really big about, hey, you need to give these guys the information they need so that they can broadcast a great television product, all right, so they can be really good at their jobs. And I always say you should get out of, you know, the coaching for a while. If you're tired of it, get into broadcasting, go back into coaching. And it really will help you, because even if you, you know, don't get, say, the you don't get necessarily the insider secrets you want, you will grow and develop and evolve as a coach, because you're going to be exposed to so many different types of schemes and so many new tactics and strategies. Either way, that's basically what they're worried about with Tom Brady, that he will learn all that stuff and then take it back to the Raiders.
Yeah.
And say, hey, y'all need to start doing stuff like the Ravens. The Ravens do this. Or, hey, the 49ers, they do this.
Or, and yeah, that we'll watch a little bit of practice film, and or we watch a little bit of practice, and they're going to run this play, and
yes,
they've been practicing this thing.
They like this practice squad guy. You should take him because he's really good. They think he's going to be a star, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's just it's stuff like that. And so, essentially, in these NFL meetings, the league confirmed to ESPN that among the restrictions, Brady would not be permitted to be in another team's facility, would not be permitted to witness practice, would not be permitted to attend broadcast production meetings, either in person or virtually. Basically, lack of access to coaches and players before games could be, I mean, that's a severe restriction. I don't even know how you do your damn job without that. In addition to those restrictions, and they presented these to these kind of Brady, they call them Brady broadcast restrictions. They presented on like a slide and everything. They had a whole presentation about this. So the owners really felt passionately about this. Like, no. This dude, he won enough championships, all right, as a player doing shady stuff that we didn't know about. We're not going to allow him to do it as an owner. And a league source told ESPN that owners had raised several questions about this conflict as soon as, you know, it was announced that Brady was going to be a broadcaster. So aside from the access restrictions, Brady, if he were to become a limited partner with the Raiders, and he would be subject to other applicable league policies for that are common to owners, including he would be prohibited from publicly criticizing game officials and other teams. While Brady could, in theory, state that he disagrees with a call on air, he would be subject to fines or even a suspension if he went too far. He would be subject to the league's gambling policy. He would be subject to the league's anti-tampering policies. He would be permitted only strictly social communication with members of other clubs. And they, apparently this will go into effect if Brady does indeed go through with his minority partial ownership of the Raiders and his broadcast deal, which I imagine he's done. He already signed the deal. And I guess you can get out of the deal if you're like, I can't do my job. They won't even give me access to do my job.
Yeah.
I'm going to go into that situation with my knowledge, of course, like Tom Brady. I know a lot, but I won't have any more insider knowledge than the fans will.
Yeah. I can't be like, I spoke to the coach earlier today.
Yes, right? Yes, you know, I was in the meeting with the quarterbacks, and this is something we talked about. You know, you can't say that.
Yeah. No, and I mean, and I get it. And, you know, you also have the factor that Tom Brady could walk into any of these player meetings and talking to the player and be like, oh, yeah, you're on the last year of your deal? You know, LA, Las Vegas is a pretty cool place. And
You can't talk to, you can't talk, it's tampering. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, do that.
I get it, and the one of not criticizing the officials or other teams is kind of funny. I think there's twofold on this too. I think that there's part of it where they don't want to have owners having that much sway in the media. They don't want to have. They feel that it's giving Las Vegas a big edge up if he basically will keep saying Las Vegas. Which, I mean, that's a hard sell right now. But that the Raiders are this great team. But I think the other side is I don't think they want players owning any part of the teams.
No, even ex-players. They don't like it.
And they're like, we get it, Tom. You want to be a part owner because you try to work this deal with Miami. Yeah. You've tried to do this a couple times. We don't want that. And so we're going to fight hard to try and keep you away from that unless you want to come to our team. And then, cool, we'll fight for you. But until you do, we don't want you to go help out the Raiders.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, man. I think ultimately – they don't like the movement of players seeking ownership. That's why they They unanimously agreed on the rule that players, current players, cannot own or they can't get a stake in ownership of a team. No players can. So there's no revenue sharing deals like Messi has with MLS, that kind of stuff. It'll never, ever happen. And I think they even want to get away from a potential Michael Jordan situation where an ex-player ends up owning part of the team. It's weird. I don't know why, but I don't know why they would fight against it, but it seems like they will. Peyton Manning is going to get it, but they like Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning seems like he's one of them. He feels they feel like, I don't know, for some reason, I think they would be more comfortable with Peyton Manning owning a team than Tom Brady.
Yeah, because I think Peyton Manning comes off. I mean, I get why. Is that
he's more right?
Do you trust Tom Brady at all? If you were running a team and Tom Brady was involved on the other team, do you not think he would do every single thing in his power to win?
Yes, which he has done.
So I get why there's distrust of Tom Brady, because we understand that he might go too far in certain occasions.
Damn right. He's tried it a few. He's tried it on more than one occasion. And has been caught on at least one occasion.
And they're like, the Raiders suck right now. So what are we going to do, giving you these keys to try and fix this team? Man. By nefarious methods. And you're going to be trying to sell this. You know, we get that you're going to criticize us, but not criticize them the same. It seems like it's a bit far. Like they're it's a bit over the top. I 100% he should not be allowed to watch practices. 100% I'm fine with that one. You don't allow an opposing owner to watch practices, especially one that played for a team that used to record practices. So you don't, even though it wasn't him, you just don't allow that. But if you get into, you know, not having any access to talking to guys beforehand, that one you go, well, if you have four guys in the room, what's he going to do?
Yeah, no, I guess I understand the NFL owner's side of it, too. I mean, it gets in all types of things. Tampering is a big part of it and all that. I really do. It truly is a conflict. I'm sure there are ways to circumvent it. But, and by the way, Brady's bid to become a limited partner hasn't been finalized yet.
Yeah.
More than a year after it was reported that he was in discussions to be a partial owner. He agreed to buy a stake in the team. Owners and league executives have had questions about the selling price of his proposed 10% stake. The Washington Post reported in March that the discounted rate that Brady was due to receive concerned owners and about the conflicts of interest as a color analyst on a broadcast partner's top television team. So his bid has been stuck essentially in purgatory in the league's with the league's finance committee. If it clears the committee, Brady's ownership stake also must be approved by 24 of the 32 owners. So once the finance committee looks at it and they're like, all right, it's above board. There's nothing shady going on here. This is in line and tracks with, you know, what our value is of this 10% stake. Then the owners, which are the ones who are bringing up all of these restrictions, they're the ones who got the beef, as Patrick talked about. They got to approve it. At least you're basically talking about, you know, 75% of the owners that have to approve it. That would be tough. I don't know if you would get that from them.
And again, when you beginning the discounted price, where they say you're lowering the value of all of our teams when you sell 10% to a guy, that basically is a marketing play because you're going to have Tom Brady be a part of your ownership. But if it's a marketing play and that's why you're selling it to him, then you don't get free access to using our TV show to promote your brand every single week, which is what you're going to be doing if he's a color commentator. So you're going to promote your brand for free on our TV show.
Let's say you can only choose one. You want 10% stake of the Raiders, or you want to be a broadcaster for a 10-year, $375 million deal. Which one do you want? Which one, if you're Brady, which one means more now? Say you had to choose one.
And you can walk away from broadcasting in 4 or 5 years and go back and buy another. I mean, it'll be more expensive then, but.
Exactly. That's you just said it right there. Think about how the value of these teams is starting to balloon. Yeah. It's going to be way more expensive then. Way more. You can always go back to broadcast. They will always take you. And they understand that you have restrictions now. It's like, I can't do my job, guys. They're not going to let me do this job right now.
Yeah.
All right. But if I get that 10% ownership, I can flip that in 5 to 10 years for double what it's worth right now. Easy.
Yeah.
And then go into broadcasting. I don't know. I think the ownership stake in the NFL might be the way to go. If you had to choose.
And I wonder,
want both ideally. But if I got to choose, NFL ownership stake, ooh, even though it's a partial, it's hard to pass that up, man.
I'm also curious of what the new – there was another rule passed or another thing passed that NFL teams can now get 10% – sell 10% of their team basically to public
– Yeah, equity. They got the equity deal. Yeah.
The equity deal. Yep. And so now if you're the Raiders and maybe you say, well, screw all this. It's too much noise and it's we don't want to deal with this anyway because we're not getting out of this what we thought we were going to get out of it with Tom Brady, but we need some money. We can go that route and sell 10% of our team to private equity and get this piece back and get plenty of money that way.
You know what the Raiders are worth after their move to Vegas?
Yeah.
In 2023, the franchise value amounted to around $6.2 billion. Take the franchise. to hell with the Fox deal, man. That's pennies. You can get that later on. 10% stake of $6 billion. Take it. It's like Travis Hunter. Should he play wide receiver or cornerback? It's easy. There are six wide receivers now making $30 million in the NFL. There are only, eight non-quarterbacks making $30-plus million, and six of them are wide receivers. Travis Hunter, easiest decision you ever made. Play wide receiver. Go where the money is. Brady, give up the Fox deal. Say, you know what, that 10-year contract, let's do it in 10. Let's do it in 5 to 10 years. Let's do it in 5 or 10 years. I'm going to take the ownership stake now, and we're going to flip that in 5 to 10 years when I'm a little bit older because right now the NFL wants to hate on me. But let me flip this 10% of this $6 billion in 5 years, and then I'll get back with y'all.
Oh, I can't.
Ooh, man. $600 million. Come on, man.
Man, I can't.
It's easy.
Oh,
it's easy.
You know what insufferable?
Easy.
Do you want insufferable in 15 years? Aging billionaire Tom Brady's going to be when he's doing announcing? It is going to be insufferable. It's going to be insufferable.
Billionaire Brady. You're right. That's a great point. Because if he does it the right way with this ownership thing, dude, he could be a billionaire.
He could be a billionaire coming back and doing these games. Back in my day, man. We used to play real football. You're like, Tom, it was 20 years ago, man. It wasn't that long ago. No. We used to fight with swords out there. No, Tom. No, you didn't.
No, you did, Tom. That would happen. Yeah. So, like I said, once again, I don't even know why this is a discussion. Tom, tell Fox I will do the deal, but it can't be now. It's got to be in 5 to 6 years. Give me some time to work through this thing. But I won't take another broadcast deal. It'll only be with you guys. But right now, they're not going to allow me to do my job. And Fox knows this, too. The Fox will be like, you're not going to do a good job if you can't talk to the team. And we lose a lot of our insider access when we bring you in. Wait till he's more palatable and more NFL-friendly.
And I mean, he can still do shows for Fox.
Yeah, he still do analyst work. Oh yeah, yeah. Just can't. Yeah, we can't have
do
you
games there.
Yeah, you can't be run a broadcaster and then be visiting with teams during the week. But yeah, you want to bow on site and just have him as a part of your pregame and your postgame.
Oh, yeah,
money. Have him doing separate things where he interviews coaches and players on his own, like separately, like literally in the studio, not on there. You can do that kind of stuff too. You can do a lot of stuff like that. You can be creative, but man, take the team ownership. Is this even a conversation, dude? Tell those people right now, hey, I'm giving up the Fox thing for now, guys. I want to pursue this team ownership thing. Let's push that through. Let's push that. I don't want any conflicts with that $600 million stake that I have right now, potentially in the Raiders. Take that. Take it. What are we doing here, man? Come on. Do I have to go advise these people? All right. Let's get to I want to get to the Texas-Colorado State breakdown. We got to get to this. I'll give you the most thorough breakdown of this matchup that you've ever heard on the planet. Nobody on the planet is going to give you a more thorough breakdown of Texas Colorado State than we will coming up next. So let's start that. We'll come back. We'll get into Raj Rant, and we'll talk about what Texas needs to do and what I expect Colorado State to do to try to pull the upset, but what Texas needs to do to pull off the win versus the Colorado State Rams. All that and more when we return right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas at Colorado State breakdown. So let's start with, of course, the Colorado State offense. They're running the air raid offense. They want to throw it top 20 in passing attempts last season, top 20 passing offense last season. That's what they do really well. That's the identity of this squad. And they have one of the sons of the originator, one of the originators of the air raid, Hal Mumme. It was Hal Mumme and Mike Leach. So Matt Mumme is the assistant head coach and quarterback coach with them. And, you know, to me, they do kind of fit more of the original kind of old school air raid approach, which we'll talk about. So they don't necessarily abandon a running game. They want more balance. I think Jay Norvell does. He's seeking more balance. They're just not very good running the football. 125th last year in like rushing yards and rushing yards per game, 120th around there in yards per carry. But they are really dynamic in the passing game. And it starts with Braden Fowler-Nicolosi, who we've talked about, 1 year as a starter. And he, you know, it's his third spring. That was his third spring this past spring on campus. So he's been there for a little while, but had his first year as a starter. Did throw 16 interceptions, but showed some promise. 22 touchdowns, 132 passer rating, over 3,400 yards. Now he lost some of his receiving threats. He lost two of his top three receivers, but the guy that he kept is the guy that matters. Torrey Horton, who had a chance to leave and go, I think, to other schools and take advantage of the transfer portal, probably get himself a big payday, did not leave. He stayed. He's a speed demon, average top speed of nearly 22 miles per hour, 575 yards after the catch. So this is a yak guy, 11th most in college football, extremely productive. He'll play on Sundays. He'll be drafted. I mean, this is a guy that actually could play on the Texas roster right now. That circle of trust I talk about, Torrey Horton would be in that circle of trust. Over 2,200 receiving yards the last 2 years. The only receivers in college football that have had more in the last 2 years, Romeo Odunze, first-round pick, Malik Nabers, first-round pick, and Marvin Harrison Jr., first-round pick. You get it, right? 96, 71 receptions on the last 2 years and 8 touchdowns in each. So this guy is very productive. He is the catalyst of the offense. It all starts with him. 23 forced missed tackles. That also shows his ability to really be elusive in the open field. He shows that as a punt returner too. But what I think is somewhere Texas could start in terms of taking him away, if those tendencies hold in the game, and they may not. They may decide to break tendency. We'll talk about that too. But if he's lined up out wide, which he does 70 to 75% of the time he has in his career, and if he's lined up to the right of the formation, which he does a lot of the time, and that is one of the characteristics of an air raid offense. They want you to really specialize in a position and learn it and become an expert in it. So they don't move him around. They're going to make Texas' job a whole lot easier. Because if they put him out wide, I think Texas, and Sark has already admitted that if they have to, they'll move Jahdae Barron around and keep up with him if they end up trying to hide him within the formations and hide him within some of the schemes. But if he's out wide, out there isolated by himself, I think you'll play bump and run coverage on him. And you put a safety over the top of. And some people say, well, that's a little extreme early on in the game. But he's the only proven commodity they have on offense, really. Everything else has upside and potential, but hasn't proven it over multiple seasons. This guy, he can beat you. Everybody else, they may be able to beat you. There's a maybe to it. We know Torrey Horton can beat you. So why would you even breathe life in it? Why would you even give it a chance, right, to flourish or thrive? I would kill that connection instantly. And I think you do it by flooding the short to intermediate game, right? You got to flood that area from 0 to 9 yards because that's most of their passing game. Braden Fowler-Nicolosi, over 50% of his passes, nearly 51% of his passes are from 0 to 9 yards. That is his comfort zone. That's where Torrey Horton does most of his damage. 575 of his receiving yards last season came on throws under 10 yards. So take those away, right? And if you take those throws away initially, that's also where he has most of his yak and rack opportunities. 575 yards after the catch, 11th most in college football. Smother those quick short throws and don't allow him the yak and rack opportunities. And then you almost forced him to have to go down the field and go to the second level of their passing game and go deeper into the progressions for Braden Fowler-Nicolosi. And as I pointed out, he does have 16 interceptions. you force him to go to somebody threats like Armani Winfield and Dylan Gaffney, who he doesn't have as good of chemistry with, and then you have better opportunities for some of those ill-advised throws that he has. So I would take away the short to intermediate game with bump and run. Now, Texas has done this, and they did it last season, late in the season. When they played against Tech, Oklahoma State, and Washington, they started to play more bump and run coverage on the field and the boundary side. Boundary side, they play a lot of bump and run coverage anyway, but they tried to play more bump and run on both the field and the boundary side, and it did work. It took away those easy completions. You guys know I've been on, you know, I've been harping on it for a while about how bad Texas was at defending some of those inside breaking routes last season. And I'll just give you the numbers, but you've heard me say them before. Against Power 5 starting quarterbacks last season, inside breaking routes, all right, just a lot of these were short routes too. Texas allowed over 60% completion percentage, over 9 yards per attempt, over 50% conversion rate on those money downs when they're throwing the inside breaking routes, over 20% explosive play rate. And this is a team that loves the slant. They love the quick end. They love the glance and things that usually you see develop in that 0 to 9 yard range. If you take that away from them like Texas did, it did versus Tech, and Tech was, I mean, 3 of 9, I think, on inside breaking routes. Oklahoma State, a similar number as well, because you took away the easy completions, and thus you kind of suffocated their passing game and didn't allow it to start to breathe any life at all. Now, Washington and Oklahoma State, too, got to give Oklahoma State credit. Their counter to your suffocating bump and run coverage and being physical with line scrimmage was simply to take you up top and throw it deep on you. And it worked. Oklahoma State was 3 of 7 on passes 20 yards or more down the field, and Washington was 6 of 8 on passes 20 yards or more down the field. Now, that was the best deep ball passing team in the country, but still, they were able to, that's the effective counter. If you're going to be aggressive inside leverage, usually you are if you're going to play press coverage and you're going to force them out to the sideline or at least force them to your help, you can do that, but then just know you're going to be susceptible to the deep ball, to them just running straight up goals on you, and they did that against Texas, which is why you saw Texas give up more of those deep passes later on in the season when they were playing some of the bump and run coverage. We also saw that in the spring game, right? In the spring game, Texas allowed 5 of 11 of those deep passes to be completed for 4 touchdowns. A couple of those came when Texas was playing some aggressive bump and run coverage, giving up the outside over the top. So that's going to be the counter. Just know. And I think that's worth it. That's why we'll put a safety over the top of Torrey Horton and allow and give them the choice to beat me with anybody else. Now, if your DBs cannot hold up, if your DBs can't hold up in one-on-one against the other guys from Colorado State, you got bigger issues anyway, and we need to know that now. If they can't hold up one-on-one against the other guys from Colorado State going to the SEC, we need to know that now so that we can plan appropriately. So I got no problem if they, like, I mean, you might get exposed on the other side by Armani Winfield on your other corner. Well, great, I need to know that. And honestly, that's, like I said, that would be refreshing to know early on in the season if those guys can't hold up, but I think they will. I think they'll be fine out there holding up against, like I said, Armani Winfield and Dylan Gaffney. What you got to do is take away Torrey Horton. So if they try to go deep on you, which, by the way, they're not good at. They're 105th in the country, Pro Football Focus grade. They're 105th in deep ball passing grade. Torrey Horton, who is their number one ace wide receiver, he was only 5 of 27 on deep passes. But here's what I found. Braden Fowler Nicolosi, the last 3 games of the season. Now, throughout the season, he was roughly, you know, 28 to 30% on converting deep passes. And even the 6-game sample size that I took from the last half of the season, still 30%. He's right around there. But the frequency of the deep balls did change. Not necessarily the completion percentage. The last 3 games of the season, it bumped up slightly to 33%. But that's about the average, actually. I think that's right around where Quinn Ewers was, right? That's around the average of converting deep balls. But the frequency, they threw 23 passes of 20 yards or more in the last 3 games. That, to me, stood out. So they were throwing deep more in the last 3 games. Texas gave up more deep passes in their last 3 games, if I include the spring game, which I just brought up. So that's something to look at if you're Texas. That'll be the counter. If you decide to take Torrey Horton, his quick game and his short game away and his yak and rack opportunities, which I would. I wouldn't even let it start to breathe any life at all. Smother that connection. And I think ultimately for Texas, defending that deep ball is going to be big. That's how they would break Tennessee. They're not good at throwing the deep ball. It's not a huge part of their offense. I believe you go look at it, you know, they're about 14% of their throws, somewhere around there, 13 to 14% of their throws are deep passes. I wouldn't doubt, because Texas has been vulnerable there, if they decide to take some shots early, see if they can get some PIs, see if they can catch Texas in some one-on-one situations. And here's another thing. This team is also really good at pass protection. Last year, they only allowed 14 sacks. That was a top 15 number in the country. And the time to throw for Braden Fowler-Nicolosi, he gets rid of football really quickly, 2.6 seconds, which aligns with the ball being thrown short and underneath a lot of the times, which is why you can't get to him. Takes you on average about 2.5 seconds to even get to the passer, let alone being able to sack him and take him down. So it's tough within that frame of time, right, 2.6 seconds to be able to get home. Now, most of the time, we should be looking for deflected passes in this game at the line of scrimmage. Think Alfred Collins in the spring game. Deflected an RPO pass, which is quick game plus run game from Quinn Ewers, ends up taking it to the house, right? You should see, I'm not saying you're going to see it one where he takes to the house, but you should see a lot of deflected passes in this game because they want to throw the ball 0 to 9 yards in that quick game area. And when he's throwing in that area, that short quick game, his time to throw actually drops from 2.6 seconds to 2.3 seconds. So you see why 50% of that passing game is from 0 to 9 yards, because when he's throwing in 2.3 seconds, you're not going to get there. Takes you on average about 2.5 seconds to get there. Here's the key, though. You want him to hold on to the ball. Then it aligns and tracks with my theory and my game plan. Flood the short game. Flood the 0 to 9 yard area. And then you'll force Nicolosi to have to hold on to the ball or throw it into really congested, clogged up, tight windows. If that's the case, we'll take it. You got 16 interceptions on the season last year. We'll take you throwing into clogged up, tight, congested windows because you're probably going to throw a pick. But if he doesn't and decides to hold on to the ball a little bit longer, when he's throwing to the intermediate area, 10 to 19 yards, guys, his time to throw rises to 3.2 seconds. Hell, by then, everybody can get home. Not just Trey Moore, Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell, Alfred Collins, Vernon Bryden. Everybody can get there. We can collapse the pocket in 3.2 seconds. But in 2.6 seconds or 2.3 seconds, it might be a little tougher. But if you take away the short game, you'll make him uncomfortable enough where he's got to look to the second level of the passing game or go deeper into his progression, hold on to the ball, 3.2 seconds, then you'll get home, then you can get sacks. To me, that's – and take away his number one weapon in Torrey Horton, which will also force him to clutch and hold that ball a little bit longer. Take him out of his comfort zone. His comfort zone is getting rid of the football in rhythm and on time. You don't want that. All right, you don't want him in rhythm. You don't want him on time. Take that away. And I think that would be, that would be my early game plan. And I think they're going to also move around Torrey Horton. You want to win big games, you got to break tendency. This young man, if you go look at his out wide rate, he's out wide as a receiver. At Nevada, where he started out, 99% of the time he was out wide. Then that number went to 81%. Then when he got to Colorado State, it dropped again from 81 to 72%. And that's kind of where we are now, where I think he's about 70 to 75% of the time he's out wide. And he's only in the slot like 20 to 25% of the time. But here's the key. When he's in the slot, he's way more dangerous than he is when he's out wide. His yards per route run when he's out wide, 2.7, 2.8 versus man and versus zone. You put him in the slot, his yards per route run, it jumps, escalates to 4.18 yards per route run. To give you context to that, the record in a Pro Football Focus college football era, basically since 2014, the record is Devontae Smith, yards per route run in the slot at 4.96 the year he won the Heisman. This dude's at 4.18. So if they look at the same numbers I'm looking at, they're going to put him in the slot a lot more. I'd put him in the slot half the time against Texas. And if that's the case, then maybe Jahdae Barron and that movable chess piece, that multiplicity in his skill set, that's something you deploy and utilize. I'd want Jahdae Barron on him if he's going to be in that slot more so than Jalen Gilbo, just me personally. And then you can put a safety over the top of him if you want to. If I am Texas, I would – look for him to be in the slot more, and if he is, make the adjustment. Sark even said they'd be willing to consider Jahdae Barron taking on that role if necessary. I would say, yeah, necessary. Do it. If he's in the slot, put Jahdae Barron on him and take him away. So that's kind of the gist of it, the Cliff Notes version of the game plan. But keep in mind, if they can run the ball, and I don't think they will be able to run the ball, but they try to run the ball, I think it'll be in the interior. It'll be the interior of that offensive line where they try to – I think they'll lean on that group. If you go look at the interior of the offensive line, that's where all of their experience is. The left guard, Alex Foster, 17 starts. Jacob Gardner might play on Sundays. The center, 45 starts. Drew Moss, the right guard, 34 starts. But if you look at their starting right tackle, 0 starts. Savion Henderson, the left tackle, does have 32 starts, but I think the experience and more of the skill and strength of the O-line is in the interior, and that aligns with the question marks and uncertainty for Texas on their D-line, right? Texas' strength on the defense this year is on the edges. They're a little bit unsure about the interior, so if I was, you know, Colorado State, if I'm going to run it, I'm probably going to run it right up the gut for Texas. And look for, and Sark brought this young man up too, Justin Marshall. Last year, last three games, rushed for over 300 yards in the last three games. He may be the one that can be a catalyst for the run game if they decide. But if anything, it'll be symbolic versus Texas. I don't think they'll be able to run it. They want to throw it 40 to 45 times. That's what they really, really want to do. I think the tight ends got some size, but I wouldn't worry too much about the tight ends. They really want to get it to the wideouts in space. All right, defense, there's only, honestly, just worry about the secondary. The secondary between the five guys in the secondary, 81 starts between those guys. And the two stars are Jack Howe, whose dad was a three-year starter at Colorado State. He's a team captain. He's a stud. He's a guy that's an all-conference caliber safety, first-team all-conference caliber safety for him. He's someone to watch. And also, I'd watch out for Henry Blackburn, that secondary. He had 17 starts, and he led the team in interceptions last season. That's the strength. You look at Chase Wilson at the linebacker spot and that back five in the secondary. Chase Wilson, also a playmaker for them, made a lot of plays. I think that's where their strength is. I don't necessarily think they can hang with Texas with their front. Their front six, not a lot of experience. They're inexperienced in their front six, only 36 starts between them, and three of those guys had zero starts. They're undersized and inexperienced. That's a bad combination going up against Texas. So I think Texas will be able to run the football, but I wonder when Texas tries to throw the football, if those two safeties manipulating pre-snap disguises, manipulating the numbers in the box with the RPO game, if they can cause Texas to have some issues, some difficulty potentially with timing and precision in the passing game, which Sark has talked about with the new faces at wide receiver, that is something we're all looking for. All right, there you go. That's the breakdown of Texas versus Colorado State. I got some special teams nuggets, but I'll give you those later. All right, we come back. We'll get into what the facts, what the stats right here on the Ridecast Beach.
And Ron, we'll say a little bit of Texas breaking news coming on the other
go
side.
Ahead.
Too.
Oh, yeah. What we got? Uh-oh.
Do you want to hit on now or do you want to hit on the other side?
Ooh, that's a tease. Okay.
Let's hit a tease.
That's how you're supposed to do it. That's real radio. He's a professional, and I'm not. All right, there you go. So we got breaking news, Texas related, on the other side, right here on the Ridecast, featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn Rod Davis. Coming back on the Horn.
With all due respect, what the
facts? Statistics.
I'm stating facts.
When
I'm
go ahead and check the stats, yeah. Numbers gone, it's a fact, yeah. Go ahead and check the stats, yeah.
The lights, that's facts.
Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep. Yep. Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep.
Statistics.
All right, welcome back to the Ridecast. Time to get into some what the facts, what the stats right here on the show. So we're talking a lot about, we'll get into this a little bit more because we got some Dak Prescott audio of him talking about starting the season potentially without a contract extension agreed upon with the Dallas Cowboys, and what he thinks of a lot of the very controversial, polarizing things that Jerry Jones says in the media, even about Dak Prescott, even about his contract. He had something, I thought, rather matter of fact to say about Jerry Jones's relationship with the media. We'll get into that next segment. But here's a stat about the Cowboys and their offense with Dak Prescott last season. They basically abandoned the run in their last last 5 to 6 games of the season. But his stat kind of points it out. Over their last 11 games, their passing rate, basically how often they pass the football, it jumped from 53% to damn near 61% in their final 11 games of the season. They've decided essentially that they were better off with the ball in Dak's hands and just throwing the football. That was the identity. And, of course, getting it to CeeDee Lamb. I remember going on a rant this last season about this before they decided to feature CeeDee Lamb and saying, just give the ball to Dak and let him target CeeDee Lamb as much as possible. And it worked out for both. But, man, the Cowboys offense, think about the running game is even, in my opinion, it's more mediocre than it was last season. And now you're bickering with your quarterback who's become the identity of that offense, not only that, but the face of the franchise. And it's the Cowboys are playing a dangerous game. Dangerous game. Like, nobody – you can make sure, you can argue that the Tex Coast offense, as it's called, is probably more dependent on Dak than most offenses are dependent on their quarterback, just because at least they have some semblance of a run game potentially. They didn't necessarily – not every offense is built around – that quarterback. Like, that's what the Tex Coast offense was essentially making it as Dak friendly as possible. And they did. They did a really good job with that too, because he played his best football ever. But after doing all that, to now potentially move on from him just doesn't make a lot of sense. Could be much ado about nothing though. That's what we talked about.
Could be
much ado about nothing.
You ready to get to that breaking news?
Yes, get to breaking news.
The breaking news, we just saw, he just made the decision in his announcement. Jamie French, the five-star wide receiver, number four wide receiver in the nation, has committed to Texas. So another five-star hitting up for Sark and Texas, the second five-star in a week.
I like that. There you go. So starting to get some momentum on the recruiting trail for the Longhorns.
Yeah, Jonah Williams earlier this week.
That was big, because I think people expected Jamie French to commit. From what I heard, that there were a lot of predictions that he was going to commit. The Jonah Williams one, from the insiders I talked to, especially the guys over there on Texas Football, shout out to Jerry Hamilton and Bobby Burton. That one was a little more surprising, because first of all, he could end up being a high pick in Major League Baseball draft. So a lot of people thought he may not even want to play college football, because he can make so much money playing baseball. But it turns out he wanted to play football. And he wanted to play both. And if he wants to play both, Texas is a good a spot as any to play both baseball and football. And then that kind of swayed the recruitment in Texas' favor that, everybody was surprised that he was actually going to play both in college, that he wanted to play football. And if you're going to do that, hey, man, why not do it at the University of Texas? Blue blood baseball program. Football is right now, the brand is hot. And I think they took advantage of that. So, and that, by the way, that dude, Jonah Williams, I mean, I think he could win a Thorpe one day. Like, I think he's got that kind of ability. I think he took a kickoff return to the house last night. That dude is the real deal. Hand-eye coordination, ball skills out of this world.
Yeah, he looked good. The highlights I saw of his last night were very good. And then you pick up another five-star today, and Jamie French deciding this morning to come to Texas. So picking up steam, third five-star in the last month, too. So as much as a month ago, people were starting to really worry about Sark and is the recruiting going to be good enough? Yeah, can he do it? And I believe Sark said, talk to me in the recruit on signing day.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, man. And by the way, this is kind of how Sark has been the last couple of years, too. This is kind of how the recruiting class worked. You've gotten a lot of your biggest recruits during the season when Texas starts gathering momentum and winning games. Essentially, Sark's recruiting philosophy is to bet on himself. That no. I think he tells the recruit sometimes, like, no, wait and see. Watch. You'll wait. And he said that recruit through the whistle, because we know, if we end up achieving our goals during the season, that we'll gather enough momentum where these young guys will want to jump on board. So I like that. Jamie French, he's a really good receiver. Doesn't really have a weakness. A complete receiver. He has amazing balance and agility for a wideout, which allows him to make these beautiful kind of Cirque du Soleil catches where he contorts his body and has outstanding body control. I made an old school comparison to him, honestly, that there's some like Lynn Swan in this game. if you go watch him, the way that he works the boundary, and Lynn Swan was so damn athletic and agile and so light on his feet that he would almost expand the boundary area between the sideline and the numbers. It seemed bigger when he was working it out there as an X, and this young man has some of that ability. He's really light on his feet. It's very strange kind of watching him outside the X receiver, the way he is able to, use his body, creates a lot of catch radius. But you'll see him, man. He makes some really nice throws where he just uses vertical and high points the football, attacks the football. Like, he never waits for it. It's always like he's going up to get it, even when he doesn't have to sometimes. It's like he stops just to go up and attack the football at his highest point. So really a lot to like about his game. All right, let's get to the break. We'll come back. We'll get into some Dak Prescott conversation. We'll hear from Dak Prescott how he feels about the current status of his contract negotiation with the Dallas Cowboys. We'll also hear from Steve Sarkisian. He spoke with the media yesterday via a Zoom call, so we'll hear from the head coach about their upcoming matchup versus Colorado State. Brandon Ayuk gets a brand new deal. Should Travis Hunter play offense or should he play defense? I think it's an easy decision. We'll come back and discuss all that and more right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, coming back on the Horn.